Hello, America. This is the place for uncensored talk on everything that divides us as a nation. I'm Alan Jacoby, and welcome to The Great Divide. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Great Divide. I have with me, again, Alex Phillips. Alex is the founder of the Great American Patriot Project. They aim to elect America First candidates, and he has now since launched, I think this is great, he's launched a website or a database, if you will, to track critical race theorists across America. It's called Expose Critical Race Theory Project, and it's just teachers and everyone out there who is just vowing to basically teach kids how to hate themselves in America. Alex, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? Good to be back.
Good, good, good. Glad to have you. You've been busy. I like it. ExposeCriticalRaceTheory.org. How did that come about? Get us into it.
Well, we came across this project. Was published by the Zinn Project, which is a leftist organization. But you know, we don't really use a lot of terms like leftist and Marxist. But basically, you know, they were listing a lot of the people and the teacher, you know, people that have effect on our kids, influence on our kids that want to teach this in schools. And I think it's important for people to have the choice. You know, if you want to your kids to learn this in school, that's fine. If you don't, you know, I personally, you know, my kids are all out of high school, and I got my boys, older boys are in college. And I just saw this morning a story, you know, at James Madison University, where they're already starting indoctrinating, you know, the freshmen there in this concept. And I just think that, you know, racism is, you know, of the past, needs to be taught, obviously, as a historical matter. I mean, we don't want to forget history, otherwise we're doomed to repeat it. But this concept of the children of today paying for the transgressions of their parents or their ancestors of the past is just not right. I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of change over the past, you know, 200 years, obviously. You know, things, you know, it was a very savage world when the Constitution was written. And it's, you know, I'm not going to try to say that, you know, all of a sudden the Constitution changed the planet and changed the country and everybody was, you know, perfect and harmonious. You know, it took time, but it was a goal. It was a place in history that said this is where we want to be. And it took time for people to change. It took time for us as a people to accept these differences. You know, it's no different than a lot of things. You know, there's a lot of old timers that say, you know, they're not into this social media business. You know,
right.
But heck, you know, the world seems to be surrounding itself with social media. The world runs on social media. It's the way that people communicate. But you know, basically trying to teach kids that because they're white, that they're all of a sudden racist, is racism, you know.
Yes.
Basically, reverse discrimination. I always wondered what that was, but as a businessman in my 20s, when I was first getting started, you know, trying to break free, mm-hmm. and I started to become indoctrinated to all the programs, and I started to think to myself, geez, if only I was black and a woman, you know, I would get all these extra points.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I just wondered, why is reverse racism anything different than racism? It's just racism on the other. It's just racism.
It's reverse racism. No, that's what it is. And, you know, when you had your affirmative action, you know, if you were more qualified for a job, it happens a lot in civil service jobs where they got extra points. Tests were made differently. And it wasn't based on merit anymore. I mean, recently and within the past few months, you had major airlines saying that we vow to hire 50% diverse employees, from pilots to flight attendants. It doesn't matter how great of a pilot they are or what their abilities and experience are, but we need to fill the minority quota so the organizations out there who think everything is racist, from polar bears to milk, doesn't attack us. So we have to, quote unquote, I guess the term now, Alex, is become woke, right? I mean, look at these major corporations, Coca-Cola, now Woke-a-Cola, look at Nike, a lot of them. They've all this woke mentality. And it's just, they turn that into everything's racist. There was a 7-year-old girl, I believe, in Tennessee. She had come home and she said to her mother, "Mom, I'm ashamed of being white." Could you imagine a 7-year-old? I have an 8-year-old going on 9, and I can't imagine her saying that. You know, she loves everybody, everything. She sees black people and Spanish people, and she just loves all people. And that's what I want her to be. That's how I was brought up. You look past the color of somebody's skin. You look past any physical disabilities they have. You look past their religion, and you see the person. Like, you know, Alex, I may not like your religion, but you're a great person that I like to have a conversation with. You're a great person. That's they're taking that away from the children, I think.
Well, I think people should have the right to feel the way they feel. And, yes. You know, it's based on your experiences. And, you know, and I will go so far as to say is that if people don't, if a white guy doesn't like black women, if a black guy doesn't like white women, you know, legislating morality is not the way to go. You know, society sort of works these things out over time. And the fact that the Constitution has basically established that these types of things are not lawful gives us the guidelines that we need to live by. But it doesn't mean that we have to legislate morality. And I think what we're doing right now and what we're seeing right now is that, you know, the government is in some states is trying to legislate morality when it comes to this, reparations, quotas, and these types of things to the extent that they can. But, you know, we've seen California go almost to the extreme now with segregation. And I think they're going to get challenged now. And so the next step is to get corporations to do these policies.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we're seeing that, you know, legislation through corporate policy go on a lot of different lines. We're seeing it with the woke, you know, situation. We're seeing it with COVID, you know, where, right. You know, Biden just asked all these corporations to do what he can't do.
Right. You know, mandate the vaccine to come to work. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of parallels. You know, you got, if you want your dog checked in overnight at the boarding house, you know, the dog boarding place, you know, they've got to have their vaccines. Okay. All right. That's, I understand that, you know, that's a regulation that they have. And it makes sense. My dog, you know, went to, was boarded once and got this kennel cough from some other dog. And I, you know, it happens. Right. And so I can understand policies like that, but you know, if somebody gives my dog some kind of medication and it kills them, I do have recourse, you know, but yes. When it comes to these vaccines, the government has made it so that I got no recourse. Okay. And so if I decide I don't want to get a vaccine for whatever reason, then I should have that right. You know, I made the choice, to get a vaccine for the COVID. All right. I don't usually get the vaccines for the flu. I haven't gotten the flu for a long time. Yep. I didn't get the vaccines. You know, I, you know, I'm responsible, wash my hands, you know, make, you know, don't go around, you know, licking things I'm not supposed to be licking, you know, that kind of stuff. But the bottom
unless
line
you're in
is,
Vegas,
is that,
unless you're in
the
Vegas.
Bottom line is that, you know, in this particular case, you know, it was a decision that my wife and I decided she wanted us all to have the vaccine. I wasn't really interested, so we compromised, and I had got the vaccine, right? That's how it works. But, sure. You know, I traveled the country during 2020. You know, I was in Florida. I was in all kinds of places and didn't get sick. I was at CPAC when the outbreak kind of hit, you know, in February last year, didn't get sick. And, you know, I got the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, got the first one, you know, nothing happened. The second one, people say you're supposed to get sick, or feel bad that day. I kind of preempted it, took my ibuprofen. So I kind of felt a little tired, but I didn't really feel down, but I probably would have felt worse, if I hadn't taken anything in advance. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm good to go and, go to Freedom Fest out in South Dakota last month. And, you know, obviously a lot of libertarians there. I would say probably a lot of them, you know, didn't have the vaccine. But regardless, I thought I was pretty safe, shaking hands, you know, interacting with folks, doing stuff. And, you know, I got sick. I come home and I got this whatever, right? I got fevers. I got some. Talk to the doctor. Doctor says I got the Delta. He, fortunately, I have a doctor. I have my doctor here who is a corporate doctor and won't give me anything for COVID at all. I've asked. So I had to go outside of my regular doctor and got the hydroxychloroquine and the ivermectin.
Yep.
And the day that I started taking it, the hydroxychloroquine was the day that the fever was gone and I felt better. So, you know, there you go. Study that, people. I took the meds and I got better almost instantaneously.
It's wild. I mean, I don't even know what science to believe anymore, because that's not the first story that I've heard the same thing. They've gotten sick and they took that regimen. As a matter of fact, my wife just got a bunch of it for the just in case. It's actually, you can get it online. You can, well, whatever. And, so when you came down and got sick and you had the fever, did you get any of the other symptoms they talk about? Like, did you lose any sense of smell or sense of taste or anything? Or
no, I had a sore throat and a cough, and you know, I still seem to have, you know, I maybe because it was the variant, I just didn't lose anything like that, but it was pretty bad, and it took a while. Even after the fever broke and everything sort of stopped, it still took a while before I was 100%. Like, I was tired a lot. So it really depleted me from, I guess, maybe oxygen.
Right.
And it took a while for my respiratory to get back to normal. And, you know, just, I literally was, you know, out of commission for weeks. I wasn't at full speed. In fact, I would say that last week, halfway through the week, this week is the first, you know, 2 weeks or week that I've felt normal. I've been able to get back on the elliptical, do my, you know, daily routine. I could sleep, you know, at night, not have to sleep all day. And, you know, I think that, you know, I've gotten back to normal for the most part. I don't feel like, and I'm not having these coughing fits anymore. But, you know, I just thank God that, you know, I've got a doctor friend that I can reach out to that can help me out. And like, you know, there's other sources, but I'm glad that is, but it's just, you know, when I called up my personal physician and they said that it's a corporate policy, you know, I'm like, a corporate policy? Geez, what's up? When did the bean pushers get in charge of medical decisions? You know, when is the CEO in charge of diagnosing and what I can get prescribed? Because my son went to Haiti to do on a mission project.
Sure.
And they gave him hydroxychloroquine, like, you know, that's just the thing. You get the malaria drug. That's what you get before you go.
You just get it. And
wasn't no corporate policy involved in that.
No. It's listen, we know it's all about money. Who's profiting? So many rabbit holes we can go down, but most of those rabbit holes lead to the truth. But they'll call us conspiracy theorists. They'll tell you to loosen up your tin hat that you just took that medicine, but that really didn't do anything. You just got over it. You know how it goes. It's we're bad, and they make it all political, which it shouldn't be. You know, I chose not to get the vaccine, and I've never gotten a flu shot in my life. I'm 42 years old. I've gotten the flu before. I worked on an ambulance in New York City for a long, long time. I've been exposed to a lot of things, and it was just my choice. And when I say that to people, they're like, "Oh, that it's because you're a Trump supporter, or you're a conservative." The big bad orange boogeyman did not dictate my choice whether to get the vaccine or not. I tell that to people, but it's just the thing now. Oh, MAGA hat wearing anti-vaxxer. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I believe in choice. You want to go get it? Get it. I don't want to get it. And then that could bring us into the whole thing now. But there's a senator right now in Manhattan, a New York State senator in Manhattan. He just put a bill together for the state assembly that he wants to add the COVID-19 vaccine to all of the other vaccine mandated for all children from the kindergarten age up for public school, that they have to get it in order to be in school. He just, I think, introduced it the last day or so. And this is, you know, we know where it's going. You got the FDA now. They're speeding up their process with approving the vaccine. Now it is what it is. How long since? So you got the shot after your second shot. How long after the second shot did you get sick? You know what the time span was?
Oh, the second shot. Yeah. It was probably good month or so. You know, I just, like I said, I wasn't around anybody for a period of time, and I went to Disney World, right? But they were making us wear masks everywhere right there. But you know, I'm pretty sure I got it at Freedom Fest. You know, I did a lot of handshaking. I did a lot of interactions with folks, and that's I would say that, you know, at least 90%+ or more probably there weren't vaccinated. You know, it's just you just got to imagine it's a bunch of libertarians mostly there. Yeah. Heck, most of them there were anti-government to begin with.
Right.
So that's, you know, they're very, very libertarian.
What do you think of these doctors in Florida? I forget how many they said, the doctors that did this walkout because they don't want to treat unvaccinated patients in hospitals.
Well, you know, that's their decision, I guess. You know, I think that they're breaking sort of their Hippocratic oath there. And, you know, I think that they've been, you know, a lot of people have their beliefs based on what they feel is the truth. And, you know, if you look at most people, and I'm one of them, I would like to be one of these again, but I'm not right now. But most people want to trust what they're told on the news.
Yeah.
They want to trust what the government says to them, you know, AKA the CDC. They want to trust. So they find that their life is stable and makes sense to them when these things all jive. Okay.
Right.
And it takes to have that trust broken before you even know that maybe you can't trust these people. And I think that people want to trust. And so these, you know, doctors are not activists. You know, they're just people who want to do their job, and they want to trust the science, so to speak. They want to have their vacations. They want to have their yachts. They want to do whatever it is that they do for fun, play golf, whatever it is. That's their life. You know, that was their plan. The plan was to go to college, you know, meet somebody, get married, be a doctor, you know, live in a big, nice house, have a golf, you know, hobby.
Country.
Yacht hobby, whatever it is that, you know, people want to live that life. They don't want to be all of a sudden, oh my God, you know, fake news, you know, government's against us. They're trying to, you know, reset the, you know, all these, you know, what we call conspiracy theories, I guess, but that what we're starting to see in real life is not really a conspiracy theory. Obviously there's still conspiracy theories out there that, you know, are a little off the edge, maybe not true, maybe kind of true, maybe misunderstood, but you know, I think people in general, and so these doctors just come into that category of the folks that want to just be part of the matrix, so to speak. They want it to all make sense, and that's where they, and you depart from that, and all of a sudden they lose focus, they lose touch, they lose something, they feel like they've lost something. And I don't know. I'm not explaining this exactly the best way. I'm not very eloquent with my words, but I think that people just want to be, they want to be part of the matrix. They feel happy with it. Just like in the movie, right? The guy got out of the matrix and then he's like, he's eating oatmeal every day. And he's like, sucks. He wants to go back. He wants to get plugged back in so he can eat steak and smoke cigars and not remember anything.
So two of my favorite things, eating steaks and smoking cigars. You know, you did explain. I get it. And everybody wants everything to make sense. That everybody wants to be able to turn on the TV and know that the truth is being told to them. Unfortunately, without a doubt, objective reporting, objective media is dead. It's not objective anymore. And most now mainstream media personalities and channels, they are activists. Doctors are becoming activists. Scientists are becoming activists, and they're forgetting what they're there for, and they're letting the things that they believe dictate what they're doing in their profession, when their profession is pretty, you know, straight cut. As far as you're a physician, you treat sick people. Here's the science. Scientists, the same thing. Us as just regular Joe Blow people, Now you have all these different things being told to us. Then you go on social media and you have 100 other different things told to us. This one's a conspiracy theory, but then this conspiracy theory actually came true. You know, some conspiracy theories, I swear that they were spoiler alerts a year ago, and then they came to fruition. And yeah, there were some really crazy ones out there as far as conspiracy theories. I like reading about them. I like watching about them because there are some of them where I say, I don't necessarily believe it, but I'll say to myself, is it possible? I think anything's possible. Anything's possible. There's conspiracies everywhere. If anybody out there thinks that the government is on the level, no. Government and politics is one of they don't call it the swamp for no reason. It's one of the seediest, dark, disgusting, dirty places you could be involved in is politics, especially on the federal level, but it's everywhere. So no, everybody wants to get the truth, and no one's ever going to be on the same page. But then it comes to, we can't even get truth out of like the current administration, the Biden administration. There's no truth in transparency. Jen Psaki goes up on the podium. I don't know how many lies she's been caught in. Well, just look at Afghanistan and the lies that Biden's being out there telling. You know, they started using, not to get into the whole Afghanistan thing. That's not what we were doing. But if you notice, they're using the narrative for the last week, the Americans that want to leave Afghanistan, the Americans that want to leave. Are there any Americans in Afghanistan that truly don't want to leave? Or is this their, and I was called a conspiracy theorist about this already, is this their now narrative for when the 31st comes, because that's when the Taliban is going to chase us out of the country, or else, and you know, Biden's took a knee to the Taliban, when we leave, and when and if we leave on the 31st, is that going to be their thing? Well, those Americans that we left behind, they wanted to stay there because communication was bad and whatever it was. And they just said, hey, we got to write it off. Is it a conspiracy theory? I don't know. Why would you keep using that term? The Americans that want to leave, So, you know, that whole spit play on words that politicians do it, government does it, and media does it. So who decides what's the truth? Who decides?
Well, they're trying to spin up the narrative. They're laying the groundwork now for, you know, all the people that are still in Afghanistan after the deadline are there by choice, either by, you know, bad choices or by, you know, conscious choice, or they didn't pay attention, they didn't get the memo, they weren't reading their emails, they didn't check their spam folder, whatever it was, you know.
It's all bullshit.
They were completely unaware of everything going on in their life until the 31st, and then they went, oh my God, I got to get out of here, and I can't now. So yeah, so we're focusing on all that. Obviously, it's a bad thing, but
yeah,
you know, geez, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, before she left Congress, and a Republican, I guess it was Rand Paul, had this law passed that, you know, the United States government can't fund terrorist organizations. I believe we just broke that one in a big way because of all the money that we gave them left there. It's like the B word, right? $80 billion.
Yeah.
The helicopters, the Jeeps, the Humvees, whatever, the guns, you know, geez, they're talking about gun control. They don't want us to have semi-automatic weapons. They just left them, you know, with, you know, a crap load of M4 full auto ammunitions. And these guys look like they're, you know, trained as well, based on some of the photographs that I've seen by our people. So, you know, that's the thing right there. And then this whole process of bringing refugees in, they're bringing more Afghanistans into the country than they are Americans right now from that country. And, you know, I just don't trust their vetting process. They obviously are not vetting people at the border of our own country.
Nope.
They're not going to vet these people coming in. And it's going to take some kind of a deal, some kind of a, you know, a quote unquote 9/11 type event.
I mean,
that's going to be like, oh, well, you know, this is because look how many of we look at some of the people of the past, you know, the terrorists of the past and how they got in through, you know, the lottery, or family member thing, the whole, you know, all those, you know, not real vetting processes.
None. None. And how many of them, they're not testing them all for COVID. They got all those people in a plane, you know, maskless, but they want to put masks on kids again in September. And then they're bringing them all over. And most of them are all like military aged men. There's a few sporadic women here and there on that photo that was going around of everybody. There was like 600 and something people on a plane that was supposed to fit 150. But not only that, now we have the unsecure southern border. So the ones that didn't make it here on our military planes are going to, you know, figure out, get out of the country, get to another country, and they're going to come through the southern border. You can't tell me that there aren't either ISIS or Taliban operatives posing as Afghani refugees, either that are going to come through the southern border because they know it's unsecure. They might have already done that. They might have had that planned already. We don't know. They got Yemeni fighters coming through the border. Or they're on that plane. I mean, they were making fake. They were coming with to the airport with fake American passports. They found. So you know they didn't just get an American passport, a fake American passport made in 72 hours. I don't think, but they were having them made. How many fake American passports possibly actually got through with all the chaos? They say they caught a few. But did they catch them all? None of this makes sense. None of it. And we're going to have a serious problem.
So I have a kind of a stupid question that maybe somebody in your audience may answer later. So, you know, I'm a pilot driving one of those big military planes. And what's he doing taking off with people on the wheels? Seems like to me that's like, you know, in the safety manual or whatever, right? That's not allowed.
So here's my theory on it. It might be an answer. I know a lot of people in the military. I talk to a lot of people, and there's a clean cut mission. You're given an, all right, Alex, you're the pilot of this plane. You got to get off. It's a hostile area. You got to get off this tarmac. We don't know if there's surface to air missiles ready to blow you out of the sky. You got 600 people on this aircraft by hook or by crook. Nothing. Usually direct orders. Nothing is to prevent you from getting this plane in the air. Nothing, no matter what. And as they're taking off, when they get a certain amount in the air, there's some footage of it. They let off the solar flares that attract the heat seeking missiles in case there's, you know, some guys down there with surface to air missiles that want to shoot the planes as they go up, that it'll hit the flares and not the plane. So I think part of that is whether it's 200, 300, 500 people that are hanging off that plane. You're in the military. You have a direct order. You got to get that plane in the air. As tragic as it sounds, the military personnel are not trained to have feelings in the height of the moment of a mission. They're trained to execute that mission to the best of their ability so it's successful. And I get it. I mean, you know, it's hard. You're in there and you're the pilot of the plane, and you know there's people hanging off the plane. I mean, how do you think those pilots felt? Nobody's talking about these guys who were on that plane where two people fell from 1,000 feet in the air.
Oh, they're in therapy. They're in therapy.
You would hope so. You would hope, but without government, they probably, you know, not helping them either. They're not very good at helping at veterans. You know, just look at the VA and all the veteran suicides out there. So, your story with the vaccine and the Delta variant, that's pretty compelling. I'm glad we got to share that whole, because I know you travel around. You travel around with, you know, you're out there with speaking at the engagements with Roger Stone, General Flynn, Dinesh D'Souza, all of them. You're all going to that, and so you weren't vaccinated, and then not for nothing. Well, I know all the places you've been, you. Good chance you would have gotten sick unvaccinated, and then all of a sudden you were vaccinated and you go to South Dakota where, like you said, most of those people were not vaccinated, being their, you know, political beliefs or whatever ideologies, and then you did get sick and you're vaccinated. But I want to get back to, because we mentioned the word activist again, to this. I just think it's amazing, this website, this exposecriticalracetheory.org. You have to go check it out. This website that Alex put together, he took public domain. There was a survey with the Zinn Project, and they told the surveyor that it was no problem, publicly available information. He puts it on a database. You can put in your state. You put in your state. I think you can even search by name. If I'm right, Alex, you could search by name.
Yeah, you can search for your area and find out if, you know, if you've got this going on in your school districts and find out what's going on. Just so you know, educated. But it's also it's been an intake, so we've been getting a lot of information. So we're not quite Project Veritas yet, but we actually did reach out to them and saying, hey, gosh, we're getting this, you know, we're getting like a fire hose of information of kind of the whistleblower types, and you know, what are you guys doing on that? And so we're kind of talking to them and seeing if there's some collaboration we can do on that region, because you know, they're like a fire hose too with whistleblowers. So I know that, you know, they're getting a lot of stuff. So I think the most important thing is just to, you know, inform the public that this is happening. And I think that people also need to, you know, start realizing that, you know, they can't be afraid to talk about this topic. You know, the BLMers and the critical race theory proponents have basically crafted this narrative that it's sort of like a mousetrap. You know, they're taking advantage of the fact that most conservatives, like about 70, 77% of the conservatives, you know, are afraid to talk about this topic, and so they cower. Well, whereas, you know, your liberals are more than happy to either call you a racist,
yes,
or accept the fact if they're white that they are racists and apologize, you know, and take a knee, so to speak, and capitulate to this. And you know what's happening is it's just psychological warfare, and you know, I'm not that unlike, you know, Nazi Germany or, you know, communist Stalinism. You know, it's like basically you make these people feel that they're obligated to capitulate to your will, and then they are easily malleable through their own volition, basically, you know, because they feel guilty. And I don't feel guilty. I mean, first of all, you know, just because I'm white doesn't mean I'm racist. And second of all, I have no history of racism in my family. We didn't have slaves, you know, most of my family came from Italy and, you know, and England. And those two directions, you know, there wasn't anything going on there with slavery. But you look at, you know, the black community, they get people riled up because it's a way to control people. It's a way to get people to vote for you. It's a way to take, you know, who wouldn't want to feel like they're going to get something because they feel like they've been neglected? Or if you convince a segment of the population that they're being taken advantage of, you know, and this is again communism 101. Mm-hmm. When you look at taking the workers, for example, and say you're being oppressed by the owners, and you know, rise up and create this socialist communist world that everyone's equal, as long as the people in charge can still be in charge.
Right. You know, it's American Marxism. That's actually the name of Mark Levin. He wrote a book called American Marxism. I haven't read it yet, but that's what this all is. And it's again, it's the they want to take away education. They want to make it indoctrination, and they want to the Democrats. That's their thing. They want to exploit black and brown communities. That's always been their thing. They promise them a little. They rabble rouse like, listen, everybody white is racist. We want to teach that and get their support, especially around election time, midterms coming. That's what they always do. They will always, or they'll exploit a crisis. They'll exploit anybody they can, because Democrats, and I have black friends that say this, that Democrats think black people are stupid and will believe anything. And that is a fact, that Democrats will do whatever they can to exploit them. So now you have the whole critical race theory. I mean, it's no secret. You know, Joe Biden wants to have 2 years of free pre-K and then 2 years of free community college, okay? So they can start molding these sponge-like minds early on with whatever government-funded education usually comes with a government message. So we have to teach systemic racism. We have to teach that white police officers systemically kill black men in black neighborhoods, sometimes because they want to. And then we have to bring that into grade school. And then we have to completely screw them up when they're in community college. And now they have the future generation of woke, progressive, socialist Democrats. And if they can get the next three or four generations just to follow suit and suppress the conservatives and Republicans as much as they can, media, social media, maybe with election irregularities, anything they can, this country in 15 years, 20 years, hopefully not 10 years, could just basically become like a Venezuela. And is it, I can't say anything's impossible anymore. Things that are happening now, I foolishly said last year was impossible. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're talking about mandating jabs. Now we're going back to the muzzling kids. This critical race theory, where I am, New York State, that's another thing. They're disguising critical race theory because everyone knows that name is tainted now. Critical race theory is a very dangerous term. So now they're calling it diversity, education, anti-racist education, but it's all the same garbage. It's all racism. It's teaching victimology. You're the oppressor. You're the oppressed. Be ashamed of being what you are because you're responsible for these people having to go through this through however many hundred years ago. And it's all convoluted. It's all based on mostly myth, not fact. And it's nonsense. So, but what's great about this website you have, this exposedcriticalracetheory.org, and we're going to have it all in the show notes and have it out there. I want people to look at this. Look up your state. I looked up my state earlier, actually last night, and I found local schools with teachers, and it'll say, basically it says what they said in the survey. And there's some really disturbing comments from teachers that are vowing, they're calling this the truth because this is their belief that, you know, whites are all racist, systemic racism, and everything else that comes with it. And these people are vowing to teach your kids. And I tell everybody, everybody has to pay attention to what their kids are doing, especially now in school. I'm an advocate of cameras in the classroom, live feeds with audio, where every parent has a code and they can go in and they can see what their teachers are saying or doing to their kids. It'll prevent activist teachers or it'll deter activist teachers. It'll deter bullying and it'll deter your kids getting touched by the custodian. Okay, but then people tell me, well, that's invading privacy of the classroom. First of all, it's a public school. And when you go and take your poodle to the doggy daycare, one of the first things you want to know is, do they have cameras in case little foo-foo gets abused by an employee or kicked? And you don't care about cameras in your classroom? Give me a break. And I could rant about this all day, Alex, but your website, so this website, people can go onto it. And they, if they know a teacher, hey, Mrs. Crabtree at ABC Elementary, she says police systemically kill black people in the classroom. People could actually fill out a form and submit it to your website for review, and you might post it on the database, right?
Well, we're not going to dox people, obviously. Right. Unless they give us permission to dox them. We do think that this information is important, and we think that trying to identify places that need more attention. Okay. We'll share this information with various activist groups and people that may want to do a little bit more digging into this.
Right.
But I think it's important that people be able to share this information and us get it to the right folks. Because I think that it's hard to find people that are that they feel strongly about it privately, but they don't won't say anything publicly. Although we're starting to see more and more of this. One of our team was at a school board meeting, and it seems like critical race theory is, right there as one of the topics that wants to be discussed, and it's usually not very favorable. I mean, I know a lot of black people are against it, as well as a lot of white folks that, don't think that they should be blamed for, crimes of the past, and called racism. I know that, you know, that it's a hot topic. It's right up there with, you know, boys going into girls' bathrooms.
Oh my God.
But I think that, you know, those types of things are very hot topics. And I think that what we've seen last year is that, you know, groups that obviously espouse critical race theory like BLM have gotten the attention of our government and corporate America. And corporate America has a lot of influence over us. Millions and billions of dollars was given to these organizations last year. And I think that many people in our government are afraid to test them again this year. We saw that. I think a lot of crimes are going unanswered because of this fear that, you know, this militant group will come back. But it's largely because, you know, sometimes you can blame the media for these things. And I think the media is very complicit in this. You know, NPR, which is a channel that I, you know, for years and years, I love listening to NPR, but, you know, every weekend I'm like, I've got it on in the background because maybe there'll be an interesting story. I like some of the funny shows, but you know, they're just, it's like nonstop racism stories of the past. And, you know, when you hear this over and over again, you know, obviously you feel like it's happening now, and it's, and you know, the, one of the things that, you know, people just forget is that, you know, the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act of the 64 and 65, you know, those types of things were set in stone to stop these things and establish the premise that everyone's equal under the law. And, you know, if people break the law, then they should answer to it. But, you know, they should not have to answer to not breaking the law.
Right. And everyone should be equal, like you said, equal under the law, whether you're black, white, brown, Hispanic, whatever you are, it's got to be the same rules, the same laws, the same justice, everything. And I get that there are instances where people are unfair because everyone's human, and there are some real evil humans out there. That's just the way it is. And you're not going to make racism will never go away. Does racism exist? Absolutely. But we don't have slaves in chains. Black business owners can get attorneys and accountants, contrary to what President Biden says. I know plenty of black accountants and black lawyers. And back with something you said, I honestly believe that there are a majority of black people and black communities that are against this critical race theory in school. And I think the critical race theory is heavily publicized by white liberals, especially white liberal women who pose as academics because they have a teaching certificate and read from a curriculum. You know, I'm not trying to downplay a teacher's job. Teachers are very important, but teachers need to keep their opinions out of the classroom, their activism out of the classroom, their religious beliefs out of the classroom, and they need to teach kids real facts, real history. That, yeah, we want kids to know slavery was bad, and that the KKK is a horrific organization, that we're all Democrats, but we want it all out that yes, this was bad times, but those times are not now. That's history. It's in the history books. Teach it. Keep your ideologies to yourself. Stop poisoning the kids, and do your job. You're certified to be a teacher, and so do your job. Don't reinvent the wheel and think you're going to reinvent teaching and be this genius academic, because those of you that are, you're not. You're a fool, and that's it.
Well, so one of the things that I think a lot of people have trouble with, and that's separating the argument from the conclusion, the premise of critical race theory. You know, it always starts with a true story, because that's the best way to lie to somebody is to start with a true story, and that way, you know, it kind of leads in and people believe it all the way.
Right.
So the conclusion in these cases is the lie. So they start off with the true story. You know, slavery existed in the past, and it was white folks, and they had black people in chains, and there was unimaginable injustices occurred. All true. All true. Okay. So the conclusion, which is now the lie, is that all white folks are racist systemically and inherently today.
Right.
And that we need to do something today to fix that problem. And that means that we need to have whatever, you know, fill in the blank, reparations,
right,
reverse racism, segregation, you know, whatever that people need to separate the two things and come to their own conclusions. Okay.
Right.
And, you know, I think that people need to stop listening to the media. It always comes back to, you know, somebody asked me a while ago, well, what can we do about this problem? And I said, is it possible to fix it? Well, the only people that can fix these problems are us.
Right.
The government's not going to fix it.
No.
Corporate America is not going to fix it. Because I can tell you right now, the government and corporate America don't care about racism. They don't care about inequality. They don't care about anything but affecting the bottom line.
That's
when it comes to government and in politics is really what government has become. It's getting you to vote for them. And in business, it's getting you to buy their product. And that's it, right? You know, Amazon is pushing this whole green thing. You know, I really don't think they give a crap about it. And now if they can save money, if putting solar panels on their roof costs less money, hey, I think that's business, right? That's not activism. That's not green.
Right.
That's business, right? You know, if I could run my entire network here at my business on a magical battery, and that will never go bad, and it only cost me a dollar, you know,
sign me
if
up.
It's green, hey, I'll buy it because it's cheap.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. But, you know, that's how business, that's how capitalism works, is, you know, it's an economic benefit. But these things that these people are doing have nothing to do with equality. It all has to do with control. In politics, if you want to have a message that everyone agrees on, you can try talking to everybody and hope that message resonates with everybody. But in reality, it won't. Now, if you can make this group smaller, you can resonate with a message that is directed at them and that group and that group. And so it's easier to resonate in smaller groups and modify your message accordingly. So this group, you talk about racism. This group, you talk about LGBT equality. This group, you talk about, you know, whatever. And you can resonate. So you take the larger group and you subset them into their categories, their labels that they give them, and it's easier for a messaging platform to resonate. And that's all this is. This was invented in World War II, Nazi Germany. It's called propaganda.
Right.
You know, Madison Avenue calls it marketing.
It's true.
Okay. But it's all the same. Okay.
Yeah.
I was at, I don't know if I told you this the last time we talked, at a broadband social justice summit in Washington, D.C. And so you can imagine, you know, the people that were there. It was all social justice types. Okay. It was D.C. types. So
the
warriors. I was like one of two conservatives there. Okay. But I wasn't there to sell anything. I wasn't professing anything. I wasn't trying to market myself or get people to come along to my side.
Right.
I was there to listen. And I had a lot of good discussions with folks. And it was ironic how when we started talking, how we all came to the same conclusions about the same things, even though we may come from different points of view to find them. But the most impressive thing there was this lady that was speaking. She was one of the speakers. So I'm not going to give out her name because I don't want to get her any hate. But I was very impressed by her. She was a woman, she was black, and she was from the Brookings Institute. Okay, and so she was super leftist. Okay, and probably thought, you know, she's talked to me before and probably kind of thought maybe I was a little bit of a racist because I'm white. But you know, we didn't get that. It wasn't an obstacle in talking to each other. But she was talking about how the internet and artificial intelligence programs racially profiles people on the internet to sell them a product. And, you know, basically high interest credit cards or high costly insurance or something
sense.
That, you know, is taking advantage of people because of their race. but they were racially profiling them. Okay. And so I'm watching her and I'm listening to what she has, and everything she said, I agreed with her completely. I believe that Google racially profiles people. I believe Facebook does it too, using artificial intelligence to market and sell them. I also believe that they do that to the black people. I think they do it to the Asian people. I think they do it to the white people. Yeah. I think they do it to the rich people. I think they do it to the poor people. I think that they profile people in general as a matter of a marketing tool. How easy would it be to sell you a product if I can profile you and only provide you product displays of things that I think you probably are already interested in?
Right.
Okay? Why do I want to sell? Why do they want to sell me? And I'm sorry, this sounds racist. Why do they want to sell me a Jerry Curl kit if I'm some kind of a white dude, right? I obviously don't care about that. Okay.
Right.
So she was right about everything she said. And then I did this little exercise, critical thinking exercise, and I replaced her with Alex Jones. So now we have a white man,
right?
Exact opposite, right-wing extremist, giving the exact same speech, but instead of racially profiling, they were censoring conservatives. It's the same story, same technology, same thing. It's exactly the same thing. So, you know, that's what's happening in our world, okay? So the question is, do we want to call it systemic racism? Do we want to call it, you know, conservative censorship? Do we want to call it anything? I just call it bad.
Right.
And people, the people that are subjecting themselves to that and falling for it, are the reason it works. Not because they tried to pull the wool over your eyes. It's because you allowed them to do it. So just, you know, everything that's wrong about the internet today is because we allowed it to happen. You are, everybody listening to this show, it's your fault. It's your fault that everything is bad about the internet because we allowed it to happen. We thought that it was so great to have all the free apps on this phone. Right. It was so great that we'd have to pay for it. But yet we give up so much of our lives for a little endorphin rush and directions to the grocery store.
It's so true. Everything is internet. Everything is social media. Everything. Businesses. I mean, you know, just look at e-commerce itself. Just look at, you know, every industry needs the internet one way or another. Every industry or business needs social media one way or another. You know, there are businesses that couldn't run without it. So, I mean, but yeah,
the whole premise behind critical race theory is wrong. You know, they start with a truth, they end with a lie, and people are falling for it because they feel guilty about the story. And, you know, everybody has a right to feel the way they feel about it. I've seen all these documentaries. I've seen a lot of movies. You know, I'm not unaware of our past, but, you know, our world's past has been very, very savage. You know, there's been a lot of injustices. You cannot take the way people think and live and act and are moral of today and put that in the 1800s, 1700s,
right,
and on and on and on. It just didn't. Yes, it was wrong, but it was how the world was back then. It doesn't make it right. It just was. It just was the way it was, and it got us to where we are today. Now we are enlightened people, so to speak. We are aware of things. And the internet is a key factor in that. You know, we know so much more about everything. You know, we know more about people in Afghanistan. We know more about injustices in Africa. We know more about how the Chinese people are being subjective to almost practically slave labor so that we can have cheap cell phones.
Right.
You know, all these things we know. But what do we do about it, right? Do we stop buying cell phones? Do we stop using free services on Google that they know that they're tracking us? Do we do anything different? No. Some people do.
Yep.
And that's fine. Some people don't, and that's fine. I know a lot about these phones. I know all the stuff that's going on. It hasn't changed me. I still use the free services. I accept the existence that I'm at. But if I decide to change, I have means. I can go to a Freedom Phone. Or I can download the open source Android app. Can't do so much with your iPhone. You guys are screwed. Y'all are going to be slaves for the rest of your lives if you don't change. But, you know, that's your choice. You know, at least you know.
I was with a couple buddies last night. We were taught that the topic of phones came out, and I had my phone. It was an old friend. He wanted my number, and I was giving it to him. And he says, "Oh, you have an Android?" And I go, "Yeah, I have an Android. Oh, I have an iPhone." And then my other buddy chimes in and goes, "Oh, you have an iPhone? Yeah, I have an adult phone." That's what they say. The Androids are the phones for adults. The iPhones are so limited and restricted. So, go ahead. What were you going to say, Alex? You had something on your mind.
Well, I mean, the world, the future is still not set. You know, no. We still have a lot of time. We still have opportunities to change the way we think. And I think just now is the time for people to start, you know, spending more, not relying on the news to tell you what to do, not relying on the government to legislate morality to you. It's our responsibility to do the right things, to be critical thinkers, to educate our children, and to be aware of how our children are being educated.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I tell everybody, I talk about this a lot, and I always end with, you have to pay attention to what your kids are doing. You have to be prepared to be controversial. You have to be prepared to be inconvenienced, whether it's withdrawing your kid from school if it gets bad and you want to homeschool, whatever it might be. That goes for critical race theory. That goes for mask mandates. That goes for jab mandates, whatever it is. You have to pay attention. The public school system, you can't treat it like your babysitter. I know everybody has to work. Everybody has to earn a living, but these are your children that you're leaving in the hands of people you don't know for 6 to 8 hours. And you should have that trust that they are doing the right thing by your kids. Teaching them about that they're bad and critical race theory is not teaching them to teaching them anything good. And you're it's a recipe for disaster. So please, one, just watch, pay attention to what your kids are doing, and be prepared to fight for your kids to make sure that they're not being taught this garbage. And you have to go to this website, exposecriticalracetheory.org. It's pretty amazing. Just look up your state, and it'll tell you everything. All these people, you might go to your state, you might see your town, you might recognize a name, and it may just stay with you. That says, oh, Mrs. Crabtree likes teaching critical race theory because she thinks it's true history and wants to tell my kid, little Johnny, that he's a bad kid and America's bad. So with that, Alex, I appreciate you taking the time to talk about all this. I'm glad that you got over the old Delta variant after your jab in the arm. And exposecriticalracetheory.org. Thanks a lot, Alex. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so if anybody's interested in meeting the team that worked on that project, they will be at AmpFest this year. In Miami, October 7th through the 10th, AmericanPriority.com. Check it out. If you do go to the Critical Race Theory website, and we are looking for people to help us out financially. If you want to donate, that would be great. You will get an email back thanking you, and also giving you a link to American Priorities website for the event, AmpFest 21. If you want to come meet people, and we will have some speakers there talking about that. So we're going to try, you know, we want to make sure that people come and learn about this. So, you know, I'm relatively knowledgeable, but we're bringing experts to AmpFest to talk about this subject, because I think it's a very important topic for people to pay attention to, because we just can't keep beating ourselves up over the past. You know, the past is what it is, and we have set the mechanisms in place to make this country a better country going forward. You know, 1965, 1966, Voters Rights Act, Civil Rights Act, the Constitution of the United States of America, you know, all these things. So, and don't ever give up.
No.
When it comes to voting too, if you feel like you're in a state where, you know, it's kind of hopeless, you don't think your vote counts, I'm telling people, especially like in California right now, if you're listening from California, you know, if you got that envelope, fill it out. Make sure you fold it properly so that they can't see who you voted for on the outside. Make sure if you're voting for Larry or, you know, whoever, that you fill it out properly and neatly and don't go outside the lines. But send it in. All right. If you don't send it in, then you've given up and you're part of the problem. Send it in. If you fail, at least you tried. It's better to fail and try.
Yes, you have to vote. You have to vote. Don't just talk about it. Deeds are more important than words. You have to vote. And you know what? The mail-in votes, if you drive to the post office and hand deliver it in the post office, if you don't feel comfortable with it being in a mailbox. Don't go to a voting ballot drop box. Don't do that. We already see, you just mentioned California. We got some convicted felon falling asleep in a car with drugs and weapons, and he had like 300 recall ballots or something like that. They're investigating that. And with all the voting irregularities, you can't look what happened in Georgia. So many Republicans stayed home because they were upset about the presidential election. And they all said, well, why are we voting anyway? It's not going to count. You have to get out and vote. You have to break the system. The more people go out and vote, the better off we are. Maybe we could break that system. If you know an independent and you can get them to vote Republican, great. There are people out there actively registering voting. You have Scott Pressler. He runs around the country. Kim Klasick out of Baltimore. I believe she's in Georgia this week just recruiting people. They're flipping. They're even getting Democrats to flip to re-register as Republicans. There are people out there doing it. You know, look all these people up. And AmFest October in Miami. They're going to talk about this critical race theory stuff, and they're going to have some other big names there. I believe General Flynn's going to be there. Dinesh D'Souza, Roger Stone, so many more. You go over to the website. That'll be in the show notes, but it's AmFest in Miami. It's at the Trump Doral Resort, right, Alex?
Trump Doral, yeah. And if you're into golf, you know, we have a golf tournament you can sign up for, play on the Blue Dragon. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Good. All right. Remember that website, exposecriticalracetheory.org. Take a look at it. Donate if you can. Check out AmFest. I may even be there. And yeah, Alex, thanks a lot for being here. I really appreciate it.
All right. Great. Thanks a lot.
No problem. All right, everybody, as always, get all the episodes and this one over at the website, thegreatdivide1776.com. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and God bless America. You take care. You can reach out to me with opinions and ideas for other episodes at thegreatdivide1776@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media at The Great Divide Podcast. And please be sure to leave a review for this podcast so the show can be shared to other listeners. Thank you, and God bless America.